It would be hard to think of three films more different from each other than a trio that opened last week in this part of the Inland Northwest. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. And on this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbender, and I will discuss the origin story superhero flick, Captain Marvel, the Spanish-language family drama Everybody Knows, and the Going to the Moon documentary Apollo 11. So don't touch that dial, because Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
Free your radio and hear Spokane Public Radio wherever you go when you listen live on your mobile phone, tablet, or computer at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Just click on Listen Live, pick your station, and start listening. Tune in anytime for NPR programs, local news, music, public affairs, arts news, and more at KPBX, KSFC, or KPBZ. You can listen to all three live from our website by clicking the blue Listen Live link at the top. Whichever station you choose, SPR travels with you, keeps you company, and keeps you in touch with the world. Visit SpokanePublicRadio.org and listen live.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that considers anything different as something worth considering, especially when we're talking about film, and especially about film that dares to vary from the mainstream norm. The first of the three films that we will be discussing this week is purely mainstream, it being the latest Marvel Studios superhero offering, Captain Marvel. We'll follow with a unique kind of documentary titled Apollo 11, which tells the same story as last year's narrative feature First Man, and we'll end with a Spanish-language drama, Todos lo saben, or in English, Everybody Knows. Let's begin with something that comes to us straight from Blockbuster Central. Little bit of wordplay there, and you'll get it in a second. And let me say this up front. Carol Danvers is no Wonder Woman, and Brie Larson, it follows, is no Gal Gadot. Larson, who won a Best Actress Oscar for the 2015 film Room, plays Danvers, a woman who is at various times both an operative for an alien race called the Kree and an Earthling who flies jets for the U.S. Air Force. If that sounds confusing, well, it is. And it remains so for fully the first half of Captain Marvel, a superhero origin story written and directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. While the film eventually does make sense, with a couple of plot twists that end up passing a social commentary regarding, for one, judging people on their appearance, Captain Marvel is basically a placeholder in the Marvel Universe, setting us up for the next Avengers film, Avengers Endgame, which is due out April 26th. Set in the mid-1990s, Captain Marvel offers up a number of amusing 90s-era references. Blockbuster Video, anyone? Even as it hits all the standard superhero tropes. And while Larson is a talented actress, so good in Room, but arguably even better in Short Term 12, her performance here feels a bit too tame to fit the most powerful force in the universe. Gadot, who resurrected the character of Wonder Woman in 2017, showed what real screen superpower can be.
I don't disagree with things that you've said, Dan, but I would like to point out at the beginning that at least Brie Larson is fully clothed throughout this entire movie. So I think I would view that as one step forward for humankind.
She also doesn't have a love interest, which seemed pretty radical to me as well.
I agree. Who knew? I'm really out of the loop here because I didn't fully appreciate the controversy around this Captain Marvel incarnation because I thought it was perfectly fine that Captain Marvel was played by a female lead, and apparently others felt differently. But as Nathan said, should we give credence to those
trolls?
Horrible trolls
No.
on the internet.
Yeah.
And
I think we ignore
them.
We
overlooked exactly. that. But I missed a whole piece of it, and it makes more sense now why when Brie Larson was doing her PR tour for the film, she kept emphasizing the feminist sensibilities of this movie and so forth and so on. There's also arguably an underlying political message that I won't go into that maybe has been characterized as anti-imperialism or whatever. So let's talk about the movie itself. The things that I liked about this film, and people know I'm not a super fan of superhero movies, but I really liked the performances by these actors who you'll recognize instantly, Jude Law and Annette Bening, for example, and then also an almost unrecognizable, and there are reasons for that, Ben Mendelsohn appears in this film, and I really appreciated that. And of course, who could overlook the performance of Samuel L. Jackson?
The digitally enhanced Samuel L. Jackson, we have to say.
Well, hey, yes, that's okay. That's okay. It happens to the best of us. But Dan, you pointed out, and was Brie Larson an appropriate superhero? And I'm equivocal about that because I do think that she is an amazing dramatic actress. And I know that it is the tendency for a number of A-list actresses to sort of develop their credibility as superheroes or action heroes in these various movies. But I didn't really fully buy her in this particular role. That doesn't take anything away from her acting chops. I just think that physically her persona and so forth didn't quite comport with what I would view as superhero material.
I want to make it clear that I have absolutely no problem with a woman taking the central role in a superhero film. Absolutely not. And I want to address the whole point about Gal Gadot playing Wonder Woman. She wasn't unclad, but she was in a basic swimsuit, although that was set in the time in which that was de rigueur for a movie such as that. But Gadot just has a screen presence as a force that Brie Larson doesn't have, and as does Danai Gurira, who played the Okoye, I guess the head of the security forces in Black Panther. Both those women command the screen in a way that Brie Larson just doesn't.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of Marvel. I don't think it's a matter of her not having screen presence, because obviously she does. Brie Larson's an Academy Award-winning actress. I just think that the character here of Captain Marvel is kind of inconsistent. We never really get a sense of who exactly she is. And of course, that is one of the central themes of the movie, that she's trying to figure out these memories that she's having and the life that she's experiencing now, what's actually going on.
How does she get her powers? Is she Marvel or Mar-Vell? That's a whole nother section that if you go back and try to do the history of it, look on Wikipedia or any number of sources, it is such a confusing backstory that, you know, the movie tries to simplify it down and maybe confuses us as well.
Well, yeah, I want to get into that because maybe I'm just dense, but I really had no idea what was going on through a good portion of Captain Marvel. I didn't understand who the bad guys were. I didn't understand who had allegiance as to who, why characters were doing what they were doing. It became clear as the movie went along, but I was lost a little bit.
Well, any film that involves shape-shifting is already going to put people off at different points.
But for the most part, I had a decent time at Captain Marvel. It zips along. The way that they sort of introduce her character is through these hazy flashbacks, and you see pieces of these memories. And I thought, this is a really unusual approach to this kind of material. And I thought maybe we would be getting a more experimental kind of cerebral Marvel movie than we normally get. And then it turns into, you know, the pew-pew space explosion chase movie. And I checked out a little bit. Maybe that's why I was confused, is because, I don't know, there's only so many times I can watch spaceships flying through tiny crevasses and shooting at one another until my eyes kind of glaze over. But what I did like about Captain Marvel was the cast that they assembled here, because it's great to see Sam Jackson as Nick Fury actually get a bigger role than he normally has. And he has a lot of fun with this. There's a running joke with him and a cat named Goose.
An orange cat.
Yeah, which we posit is a reference to Top Gun. I liked that a lot. And I think Annette Bening should be just a villain in every Marvel movie now. I didn't quite understand what her function was in the story, but she has that kind of icy villainess quality that I'm always looking for in a bad guy. But, you know, every Marvel movie has a weak villain, and I think this one is no different. And you mentioned, Dan, that this was set in 1995 or 1996.
Yeah, in mid-90s.
And I almost wish that they had leaned into that even more.
I agree, because I didn't I didn't quite get it at first. I mean, I saw these mid-90s references, but because of the time shifts, the shape shifts, mm-hmm. Et cetera, I didn't really catch on.
It didn't feel like the 90s, you know? And I don't go to a Marvel movie for subtlety, so why not give me even more obvious music cues like the Guardians movies do? And this film, Captain Marvel, actually shares some tertiary characters with the Guardians of the Galaxy. There are some good songs in here. Nirvana and Hole and TLC, and there's a whole fight sequence set to No Doubt. I wish they had gone even further with that, you know?
And there's the one scene when she falls into the Blockbuster and she picks up, she's holding up a DVD of The Right Stuff, or maybe it's VHS.
I think it's VHS.
Remember.
Yeah. Well, and there's also,
but that goes by so fast that most people are going to miss it.
There's also a joke involving the dial-up speed of internet, or they're downloading a CD-ROM. And again, that's a decent enough joke, but they don't go far enough with it. Like that CD should have taken a real long time to load, and then you'd have a joke. But you know, this is what it is. It's place setting, and you know, we've seen a lot of these origin story movies before that usually we're left wanting a bit, and sometimes the second and third entries are a lot better. So maybe now that they've set up Carol Danvers, maybe a bit sketchily, they can actually get into what makes her tick and what makes her an interesting character. And maybe Captain Marvel 2 will be really, really good.
Well, yeah, because we did get some information about her backstory and so forth, but it wasn't quite enough. And I will say that the one thing that has been heartening to me about this film is, I mean, we talked or alluded to the pushback that Brie Larson got, and then we critiqued her performance a little bit, but the women actors in Hollywood have rallied around her and really been very supportive of her taking on this role of dealing with the criticism that she's received in a very poised way, making statements that push things forward. Because one of the things that Brie Larson did was she, during the whole press tour, she was trying to emphasize that there were not enough reporters who represented a wider range of diversity. You know, they were mostly white males asking her questions.
Sorry.
I know. Yeah. You need to apologize for that.
I was on a press junket many years ago for the movie Always. Half the room were women. We were all white, but there was 8 or 9 reporters there. Half of them were women. So I don't know that that's always the case.
But I appreciate her at least bringing some of these things to our attention when she had the opportunity to really take a look.
Nothing Nathan and I have to say here about Brie Larson is meant as a criticism of her as an actress or as a human being.
It's I was defending
Brie
Larson.
Are better,
yes, she
some,
were more so than I was. Yeah.
Some
actually.
Roles are called for with different actors, and I just don't think she was.
I don't think she was the problem. I think it was the writing here, and I think they couldn't decide if she was like a fish out of water or a cocksure kind of swashbuckling type.
Whereas
you look at Wonder Woman, and that is a fully fleshed out character that makes sense from beginning to end. You completely understand where she's coming
and Black
from.
Panther, same
absolutely.
Thing.
This is about half the movie that Black Panther is.
Right. And that was Captain Marvel. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember, you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the documentary Apollo 11 and the Spanish-language film Everybody Knows. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. We're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Captain Marvel. Let's now move to a couple of completely different experiences, the moon landing documentary Apollo 11 and the Spanish-language family drama Everybody Knows. Let's begin with a study of what happened over the course of 8 days during the summer of 1969. To be specific, those days were July 16th to July 24th, which embodied the full length of the Apollo 11 mission, famous for being the flight that landed Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the surface of the moon. By now, everyone should be familiar with the story, especially since last year's film First Man, directed by Damien Chazelle, outlined the same story, with Ryan Gosling playing Armstrong. The strength of the documentary simply titled Apollo 11, as directed by Todd Douglas Miller, is that it was put together almost completely from previously unreleased archival footage, syncing some scenes with recorded dialogue, much the same way Peter Jackson did in his film They Shall Not Grow Old. Miller gives viewers a sense of being present before, during, and immediately after the mission. He uses no narration, no talking head interviews, and relies solely on the images and sounds and the occasional voiceover from the likes of legendary CBS News anchor Walter Cronkite. The result is pure cinema and a film that is bound to be one ranked among the best documentaries of 2019.
I certainly agree with your perspective, and it was a little bit unexpected because I felt as though after First Man, maybe we had done away with an interest or had not continued to spike interest in this whole area. But yeah, they did such an amazing job remastering some of this archival film and just sort of focusing in on the different people who were involved in making this work. And when you stop
to think, the people watching it.
Right. Right. That was interesting. And as you pointed out, as we were viewing this particular film, boy, the group of people who they assembled to watch this film looked like they came from central casting from
1959, you know, not 1960.
Yeah, from
yes.
like white Midwesterners wearing little outfits from Laura Ashley and so forth. Yeah. So it was a really
bubble hairdos for the women.
Yeah, it exactly. Was, yeah. It definitely was not the Summer of Love participants who were
no.
watching this. But I think for people who lived through this era to see more of the behind the scenes workings, and you know, so many things could have gone wrong.
Oh yeah.
Didn't. That in and of itself is almost miraculous. More important, it also gives you a sense of, even though things were in transition in 1969, when you're looking at Apollo 11, you could also see how much hope and inspiration existed, something that seems a little lacking in today's current climate.
A little lacking?
Oh, just saying.
I think you're absolutely right.
But yeah, if you have the opportunity to see this again, I would suggest that you do try to seek it out on the big screen, because it is one of those films that we've talked about before that would play out best in that context.
Absolutely. See it in IMAX if you possibly can, because a lot of the footage was 70 millimeter footage. And in Apollo 11, you are placed right there. You're right next to that Saturn rocket. You're right there walking among the crowds of people standing there in the sun with their sunshades and watching what was going on, or in the control room, both in Houston and there at Cape Canaveral, or Cape Kennedy, I think it was called then. I think that Damien Chazelle is just very, very happy that this movie did not come out before First Man, because it makes First Man irrelevant. This is one of the better documentaries you're going to see in this decade. I don't think I'm overspeaking. At any rate, that was Apollo 11. Let's close with a film titled in Spanish, Todos lo Saben, which translates to Everybody Knows. Asghar Farhadi is one of Iran's greatest filmmakers, so it seems strange to see his name associated with a Spanish language film, though the topic of that film fits his cinematic concerns perfectly. Farhadi, you'll recall, wrote and directed both the 2012 and 2017 Best Foreign Language Oscar winners, respectively titled A Separation and The Salesman, two films that feature family strife and hard decisions. Everybody Knows, which Farhadi again both wrote and directed, tackles some of the same material, yet is, in the end, more of a genre film, a kind of psychological mystery instead of straight psychological study. It involves a kidnapping, betrayal, old grievances, and an ending that is open-ended, even if it is also somewhat predictable. Yet, as with his other films, Farhadi has cast well, using such talents as Spanish actors Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz, along with Argentine great Ricardo Darín. This may not be the best Farhadi film ever, but even middling Farhadi is worth checking out.
Absolutely, and I'm not going to quibble with him being one of Iran's greatest directors. I think he's one of the greatest directors in the world. I'm a massive Asghar Farhadi fan, and I just love the way that he makes movies. They have this kind of confidence about them, despite being totally unshowy. His movies don't have big visual moments. It's mostly about the characters and what they're thinking. And they're very unhurried. I'm sure most people would call them very slow, but I've found them hypnotic almost. And he can give conversations like the weight and the electricity of something you might see in a thriller. I mean, certainly Separation and The Salesman are that way. And I think those are both two of his great films. And this one, everybody knows, I think, is more minor Farhadi. And I think it's because we've seen him do this exact thing many times before. I mean, it's another family drama that's set off by a traumatic incident that happens off screen. The exact same thing happens in A Separation, in The Salesman, in About Ellie, which was an older film that was re-released a few years ago. And like those movies, the basic elements of Everybody Knows, it kind of sounds like soap opera or melodrama. But it isn't. And, you know, he's more concerned with the morality of the situation than he is about the actual mechanics of the plot. And so there is a kidnapping, but it's about the characters deciding, well, could we go to the police? Do we have enemies? And then the discussion of that leads to bigger secrets that have developed between
long
the characters.
Held simmering some of which resentments,
yes. Some of which I called before they were revealed. I think some of it's pretty obvious here. But also, once we find out who's behind the kidnapping plot, I don't think that he convinces us that these people would do what they do. The motivation there is a bit fuzzy. But I think for the most part, I was really absorbed in this. And I think those two central performances by Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem are really good. I mean, her in particular, Penelope Cruz is giving you everything in this as this grieving mother. And I do think it's worth seeing. I don't think it's in theaters anymore. I think they pulled it after a week. But you're right. Farhadi
sure
is just
see
great.
See this particular film in theaters.
Maybe
you know,
not.
Because it's a close family picture and so forth. So
they could have done it as like a stage play almost.
That's how it felt at different points. And I guess I was a little bit less impressed with the plot than I was with the performances. I mean, you will be bowled over by the performances.
Oh, yeah.
And so it almost doesn't matter. But there were some things that happened that did not seem completely credible or that seemed atypical. But maybe that was the point. I always am concerned. So here you have this sort of multicultural approach. We as U.S. viewers are trying to figure out what's going on in this film that takes place in Spain, that's directed by an Iranian director.
Right.
And so maybe something gets lost in the translation. So, but definitely well worth
right.
watching.
And you had pointed out, you called out Penelope Cruz. Let's point out that she's always terrific in Spanish language films, not so good in English language films.
Well, she won an Oscar for an English language film.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But Bardem can do both.
Yeah.
And
I think they both can do both.
He is so good in this movie. His just simple reactions to everything, the expressions on his face.
You know exactly what he's thinking.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So that was Everybody Knows, Todos Lo Saben. Mary Pat, you have something you wanted to let everybody know?
Yeah, about? I just wanted to give a shout out to the Movie Monday series at the Magic Lantern. It's not every Monday, but periodically. It showcased Hale County, which we talked about 2 weeks ago on this program. And this coming Monday, March 18th at 7 p.m., I will be introducing a film documentary titled Blowing Up. And it's a court in Queens, New York, about how to handle prostitution cases, focusing primarily on the women who find themselves ensnared in sex trafficking and so forth. And I think it's well worth seeing.
So that's going to be at the Magic Lantern. What time again?
Correct. 7 p.m. Monday, March 18th.
And some of these Monday night movies have been free. Is this one you have to pay for?
No, this one does have a fee, as I understand it.
Okay, good. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Murray Pett, Truth Art, and I discussed the Spanish language film Everybody Knows, the superhero blockbuster Captain Marvel, and the documentary Apollo 11. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tavenant for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you, too, our loyal listeners. And we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again brave the world of contemporary cinema. Until then, remember these words from the second man on the moon, Buzz Aldrin. By the way, while Neil was the first human to step onto the moon, I'm the first alien from another world to enter a spacecraft that was going to Earth. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.